You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
I just wanted to start off today talking about the new financial sanctions imposed on Russia's Federation Council and defense organizations. You know, financial sanctions have been one of the main ways the international community has decided to take a stand against Russia. Do you have concerns on how they affect the ordinary day-to-day Russian citizen?
So I think every country that imposes sanctions understands, and this was the same with Tehran, when sanctions were imposed on them as well around their nuclear position, there's an understanding that there's going to be an impact not just on the government but on the citizens. Part of that is that the citizens then generate some leverage on the government, and at some point it becomes unsustainable. But yes, of course, one understands that the real non-political impact is on the citizens. When you do these sorts of sanctions, the hope is that then turns into leverage on the government and they change their political position.
Yes, because I understand having this effect on the citizens is meant to urge them to put pressure on the government to make changes. However, do you think it's fair enough to say that we're not exactly dealing with a government who is going to be super receptive to what its citizens have to say?
Yeah, there's definitely different leverage that citizens can bring. And certainly it would seem, because we've seen arrests for citizens in Russia expressing support for the Ukraine. So, you know, definitely a different environment there. But I think the observation over time is that eventually the will of a people eventually supersedes a government that is taking them down a bad path. Hunger drives a whole different set of levers, for example. And so, yes, while that may be more difficult in a large confederation like Russia, that's a fair point. Eventually, over time, history tells us that the people, the will of the people, eventually gets conveyed. But on the way, of course, there's a lot of damage. If we look at what we do with Russia, what our contribution to that is, we export around $250 million, which is mainly dairy. So that's what we're withholding from them. And of course, the tariffs that we're putting on their imports, which is mainly fuel and fertilizer, about double that amount, about $500 million. So we import more than we export. So that's sort of the tariffs, if you like, the trade sanctions that we've placed on Russia.
Are there any concerns over how these sanctions are going to affect the global economy?
Oh, yes.
Especially now, considering COVID, inflation being where it's at.
It certainly adds to, as you say, we've already got logistics chains issues due to COVID. And now one of the major fuel producers in the world is facing trade sanctions. So, yes, I think that undoubtedly this has a global impact on all of us. But that's not of our choosing. And sometimes it's a position you've got to take to support the rights of another nation.
Now, I'd just like to move on to our second topic for today, which is the reopening of the borders to 60 visa waiver countries. What's the National Party stance on this?
So everybody's stance should be that we're balancing business and social networks versus the safety response. And our spokesperson has been encouraging of this opening for some period in time as the elimination strategy fell away and it was that we weren't going to eliminate COVID from New Zealand. Then a number of the reasons for the border settings became less and less viable. In fact, if we look at the documents that have come out in the past few weeks showing that Ashley Bloomfield, in fact, it was Caroline McElnay, as I recall, early in November, maybe December, was saying that MIQ no longer served a purpose. Key health officials had also been agreeing that some of the border settings needed to change. And so it's always that balance for everyone, for every government. That's the balance, business social networks versus health outcomes. And so it looks here now, and our position has been that it is timely for those business and social networks to look to re-establish.
Are you concerned that the reopening of the borders is going to bring more of the virus into the country?
What I'm concerned about is actually the other non-COVID viruses. And I have been for several months. I've talked about this for quite a while. And I've particularly focused on measles. We have significant risk from measles here in New Zealand, and opening the border does create a measles risk. If we look back at the botched measles catch-up program, July 2020 through to February 2, there's a cohort of New Zealanders between 15 to 30 who have never had satisfactory measles protection. There's probably at least 300,000 of them. And this was a program, it started in July 2020, looking to vaccinate them. And what happened was it was terribly botched. They didn't get the promotional material until September, and then the program was paused in February. And when we look at how many of that large group have been vaccinated, it's probably less than about 5% for $1.7 million. And then, of course, the corollary to that is $8 million of measles vaccine put in the incinerator in this past few months. So, yes, to answer your question, I am worried about other non-COVID viruses re-entering New Zealand. And bear in mind, when they do, they're going to find an immuno-naive environment because we haven't, our immunity hasn't experienced or been exposed to these viruses over the past 2 years. The course will be more challenging for those who do catch it. So yes, there are of course concerns that COVID might come in, but I'm also very concerned about the non-COVID infections that might re-enter New Zealand.
Now, I'd also like to touch on the economic repercussions of the reopening of our borders. Obviously, tourism has been one of the hardest hit sectors during the pandemic, and finally sort of getting tourists back in is hopefully going to remedy that. But are there concerns that with inflation being where it is and things in the country just being a lot more expensive than they used to be, that New Zealand isn't going to be as lucrative of a destination as it traditionally has been?
Yeah. So if we look at the areas that we want to try and stimulate quickly, clearly tourism, and as a subset of that, hospitality and accommodation, they've suffered hugely. Can I also point to our international student market, $5 to $8 billion of international students that have effectively been closed to us, and they've made other choices. They've gone to Canada, they've gone to Australia, so it's another market we do significantly need to take into account. But to answer your question, are we welcoming with the issues we've got in New Zealand? Look, by all accounts, people have appreciated that we have a relatively COVID-restrained environment, so they feel some safety rather than going to a country where it still might be pandemic. So that's in our favour. Our costs are high. That's not in our favour. But the New Zealand dollar is falling. So that is in their favour. So there's a lot of things that you sort of weigh up here when you take that into account. The proof will be in the pudding as to, with the doors opened, do we have that surge of visitors back to New Zealand to prop up again the tourism, hospitality, accommodation sector? And if not, what do we need to do to make ourselves attractive on the international stage?
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.